Welcome to the Early Wedge Tuesday Best Bet Show. I am your host, Eric Cohen. How about this show? We've been on for, what, 2 weeks already? We are dropping winners left and right. I'm not dropping winners. The other three guys are dropping winners left and right. Let me tell you what we did last week. Matchups, 6-1. We were plus 6.4 units. The only one that lost is when C and I went head-to-head on Top Canadian. I had Corey Connors that hit. So we'll give him a pass there. Otherwise, undefeated there. Patrick nails the Live Hong Kong winner, Sergio Garcia, 25-1. He was on my fade list. Of course, Patrick hits, no surprise. But then the big story last week, the Puerto Rico Open, Jason and Sia, Carl Phillips at 70-1. How about that? Guys, way to go. Let's bring him in right now. Let's celebrate our wins. We have the host of the Early Edge every Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Eastern, Sia Najat. We have the renowned golf expert. I mean, who tells, by the way, the best stories. I can't wait for story time later in the show. It is Jason Sobel. And then we have Mr. Scratch Golfer himself, straight from Ponte Vedra Beach, formerly in Tucson in the last week. It is Patrick McDonald from CBS Sports. Patrick, we'll start with you. Tell us, Stewart Cink, how did it go last week at the Colligard Classic?
I thought he was going to win the tournament. Came up short there on Sunday. The tip I gave him on the seventh fairway, I guess, folded under pressure, unfortunately. But he shot 59 on his own golf ball. It was one of the funnest rounds to watch ever. Great guy as well.
Sobel, you were telling us you're sandbagging your friends. You come out, tell everybody what you did before this show today, how impressive that is.
No, man. I ain't talking about that at all. We're keeping this private between us. Now it sounds like I did something bad. I went out, I played 9 holes, I shot 1 under, and then I said, wait, sorry, guys, got to go do a podcast. Can't put in an 18-hole score. We got member guest season coming up. I got to keep the number as high as I can get it.
Excuses, but you know what? I'm here for it. So I'm in a golf league as well. I mean, not as official as yours, but I appreciate that. And Sia, here we are. How's it feel to hit a 70-1 last week?
I love these alternate events. I mean, you're going to see it with my outright card. It's not super fun for me to bet when you've got like some of these top tier guys in the field. Anytime there's an alternate event, and congrats to Jason and of course Patrick for hitting Sergio Garcia. That's 2 in a row coming off Highsmith at 110-1. I just think there's so much fruit in these alternate events from an outright perspective specifically, but we absolutely killed it on last week's show. I'm excited. The chat is really excited. This early wedge thing, it's really picking up here.
Yeah. Well, we love this show. It's our second year of doing it with all of us. Well, Sobel's new, but great. The other three of us have been here, and Sobel, you fit right in perfectly. So obviously glad to have you. Let's get to storylines. And I guess, see, I'm going to start with you because the news of the day was Tiger Woods. So just kind of give us your thoughts on that and then storylines.
Yeah, I just that's kind of my storyline because it's almost impossible to do this show without at least acknowledging something outside of the player's sphere that this show is designed for. You know, Tiger rupturing his Achilles. You know, I think we all kind of and maybe, you know, I don't need to comment too much. We all internalize these things pretty much the same way. But, you know, we didn't think Tiger was going to be super competitive necessarily over the next couple of years or this year, but just seeing him at TGL, seeing him, you know, laughing it up with now Patrick's best friend, Max Homa, that interview was so unbelievable. It was really, really good. Go and find that interview. It was really good. But I just wanted to see him on the course, whether he was competitive or not. And obviously we're not going to, I don't know if we're going to see it again. I hope we are, but we're certainly not going to see it anytime soon. So it's just sad.
Patrick, your thoughts, everything down there, you're at TPC Sawgrass. What's everybody saying about Tiger being done for, I guess, a while?
It was weird. It dropped during Ludwig's press conference, and I don't know who it was, but like you see the tweet pop up on your computer, and then the next question to Ludwig is like, hey, man, you hear about Tiger? And Ludwig's like, what? he's like, oh, he just ruptured his Achilles. Do you have anything to comment on that? He's like, that's really sad. Like, what do you want from me? I think people were confused with whether it was a tear or a rupture at first. People were drawing parallels to the legend Bernhard Langer, who tore his Achilles last year playing pickleball and then came back, I think, in like 3 months, but it was a rupture, which is more what Kobe, Aaron Rodgers, those guys were more ruptures. So sounds like we're not going to be seeing Tiger for quite a long time, which is obviously a bummer with the Masters around the corner.
Let's talk about this week. Sobel, you think this is a tough tournament to handicap? You're saying the toughest?
I think it's the toughest one of the year. I've been writing previews for this tournament for over 20 years now. It makes me feel old, but for the longest time, I've said, you know, we've had great players like Tiger, like Phil win this tournament. We've had journeymen like Craig Parks. We've had veterans. KJ Choi is the example I use. We've had rookies like Siwoo Kim. We've had big hitters, Rory, Jason Day. We've had short hitters like Fred Funk. I mean, it's really hard to narrow down because TPC Sawgrass takes every club in your bag, and you've got to be so precise with every single club. That said, I do think things have changed around. There's a trend over the last half decade that we're seeing at least at the top of the leaderboard every single time. And I know we'll get into that as the show continues.
I'm going to give you my storyline. That's kind of a weird one. I want to get you guys' thoughts on this. So 14 of the last 17 winners of the Players had an AM PM starting time. So they start in the AM on Thursday and then start in the PM on Friday. Is this a meaningful trend that we have to play? Now, Scottie Scheffler last year was PM AM split. See, I know you pay attention to this more than most when doing FRLs and stuff like that. Is this something that we need to focus on, or am I just kind of just toss it?
So normally I just frown upon trends across any sport. I think they're mostly worthless, but I can't ignore this one in the sense that, like, that's a pretty compelling split, right? You said 14 out of the last 17. I don't know. Maybe Jason and Patrick have an explanation for this. I'm not going to pick my outrights based upon this. In other words, I'm not going to take out somebody that's got a Thursday PM time, but it is really interesting. I don't know. Speaking of first round leaders, I don't know if it's because this is such a difficult setup, especially with the wind at play, and those that get off to a good start early aren't necessarily like scrambling to make the cut on Friday. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, that's my only explanation, is some of these big guns get out to a good start in that Thursday AM time, and they're just not as pressured Friday afternoon.
Jason, you've written previews, as you said, for the last two decades here. Is this a meaningful trend, or am I off base with this one?
I don't think so. I think that there are certain weeks when you look at the wind and you say, okay, well, the wind's going to be blustery in the afternoon, and then tomorrow afternoon it's going to lay down. So, you know, there should be an early late wave advantage, but I don't necessarily see it this week. What I like to do is take all the guys that I'm playing for the week, whether it's betting, finishing position, outrights, finishing position bets, DFS, and I'll essentially put them all in my favorites on the PGA Tour app. And then I'll sit there and look, and I'll go, and it's very AM and then late AM Thursday, PM Friday heavy this week for whatever reason. I'm not going to change it if I, you know, think that the wind might be a little bit in the favor of the other wave. If it looks like a massive differential, then yeah, but I don't think that's what we're going to get this week.
Patrick, I rely on you for weather reports. You're on site. What do you got for us?
Oh, great. Let's see. Monday, really wet. They shut down the facilities until I think three or four, maybe. Not a lot of guys got some holes in, so maybe playing a little catch up on preparation. Dried out pretty good, though. Only saw maybe one puddle out there, so I figure by Thursday morning, we'll be good to go, dry up throughout the week. As for the trend, EC, you said it yourself, 100% of the winners since this time last year had the opposite start time, so kind of puts you in a pickle, right? What are you going
to
do?
And from there, we will move on to first-round leaders because I have no good retort to that. All right, Jason, we're going to start with you, and I guess we're going to start with a guy that I said he was not on the do not bet list because he was close. He was like the one guy that I said he's not going to win, but just in case he pops, I'm not putting him on the do not bet list. Fortunately, Russell Henley was not included on that we'll talk about again later in the show. And he did win last week, but you think he's going to start out pretty well this week in FRLs.
So I'm not changing my narrative around Russell Henley. And look, narratives are crazy in golf. Think about this. Russell Henley said afterwards, oh, my caddy, Andy Sanders, told me if that chip didn't go in, I know nobody saw it because NBC didn't get back from break. We'll have to take his word for it. But Andy Sanders told him, yeah, if it didn't hit the hole, it was only going about 5 or 6 feet past. No, that's baloney. That thing was flying off the green. If that doesn't catch the cup, we're talking right now about Colin Morikawa being a three-stroke winner and trying to go back-to-back this week. Instead, we're like, wow, Russell Henley really nutted up and won the Arnold Palmer Invitational with a great shot at the end. I take nothing away from Russell Henley, but the fact that, and again, credit for being open and honest in his post-round press conference, but he talked about how nervous he was over three footers on the final two holes. And I'm like, dude, careful what you wish for when you're like, oh man, I want Russell Henley going out there five matches in the Ryder Cup. And guy gets very nervous in nervy situations. We've seen it in the past. I like him. I think his game is really good. But for me, Russell Henley is still either a floor play for finishing position bets, like a top 20, or I want to play him just for the opening round. And he's a guy that I've targeted for first round leader bets for a couple of years now. He tends to get off to hot starts, and coming off a win with all that weight lifted from his shoulders, I like Russell to stay hot on Thursday. And my other guy is a guy that's been hot all year. Saw him shoot 76 in the opening round at Bay Hill, and then came back with three rounds in the 60s, squeezed into the top five, a Rory-ish backdoor top five finish, if you will. But Sepp Straka is playing some really good golf, and I like him as well.
All right. See ya. Patrick, I guess you're staying out of this one. Just any quick thoughts on your boy Henley? I know you're a big fan here.
Just absolute blasphemy from Sobel there on my boy Russell. I did not get to any first round leader plays, but I will say there is a tee time out there that I planned on betting. Sepp Straka is part of it. And I figured I was just going to roll with all three of them. It was Sepp Straka, Nick Taylor, who I love this week. And then it was like one of those things like, oh, I invited two of these guys to the party. Might as well invite the third, Thomas Dietrich. So he's getting in the mix as well for me.
All right. Fair enough.
Could not tell you his number.
Three guys that won earlier this season. They obviously grouped them together for a reason. Sia, you're on a different side of this, I think. What do you got this week?
Straka. I mean, welcome to the Sepp Straka show, everybody. Yeah, I'm on Sepp Straka at 60-1. Absolutely like that. I do think you'll find out this out later as well. We've got Henley's picture, but it's Justin Thomas at 35-1 that I do like. I like Justin in this tournament. I do think things are trending in the right direction. He's got to get the putter going. He's got to be okay off the tee. But this is a guy, whether he wins or not, can absolutely get red hot at round one, especially with that dialed in approach play. So I think 35-1, it's not a great first round leader number, if I'm being honest. But it's good enough for me to bet it. Sepp Straka is the next one. And these two, I'll just kind of group together. I mean, Zalatoris at 70-1, Aaron Rye at 80-1. I'm pretty impressed with Zalatoris. I watched him in round three, his front nine in particular, when he was out with Matt Fitzpatrick, and I really wasn't impressed. I didn't think he looked very confident. I thought he played very conservatively, all those things. But when I look at the metrics, like overall in the tournament, he played really well. The ball striking was really good. He's got to get the putter going. He's a perfect candidate for a first round lead. I don't expect him to close over four rounds, but I think the game for Will Zalatoris is more informed than people think. And then Aaron Rye, ball striking has been crazy, crazy good. This is a guy that probably won't win the tournament, but at 80-1 as a first round leader, absolutely love it.
See, when you see a tournament of 156 players, as compared to what we saw last week with around 80, do you bet less on the FRL market just because there's so many more players this week than in the signature events?
Not really. I think it's 144 as opposed to 156, but same principle. Like I'm going to pick out four or five guys that I think are long enough odds to create value and that have the spike potential. So it really doesn't matter. Like if it was 120 person field versus 144, or I should say a 72 person field like we've had in the signature events, it doesn't really matter to me one way or the other.
All right, fair enough. Coming up next, last week we made you guys a lot of money in the matchups section of the show. Can we do it again after we hear from one of our sponsors? All right, Patrick, go ahead. You get to go. Yes, you want to start? Yeah, go ahead.
I want to say something. We talked about the Drake Bulldogs on this program last week or the week before, and then I check in Twitter for the first time this afternoon. I see Sportsline tweeting a couple guys talking about how Drake's going to be winning multiple games in the tournament. And here I am thinking, are you guys just watching the early ledge for my basketball tips or something? So just wanted to put that one out there.
I believe one of the guys I believe one of the guys in that clip is on this show, if I'm correct, that you were – you go ahead, Sia.
Yeah, that's me. But I wasn't the one giving the take. It is funny that – you know, Drake came up. It was on the CBS Sports Network show from 12 to 1. I had Larry and Mike McClure on. Mike McClure obviously does a lot of shows here. They both like the Drake quite a bit. So dangerous team.
You know my strategy of betting outright, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You got to parlay them. You want to bet less, make more. You parlay them. This is a great week to do it with college basketball on day and night. So, but you got to be with me on this one. You like to parlay stuff.
I love to parlay stuff. By the way, can I tell you my little story from this past week, which I was so into the Carl Phillips play that I wasn't even really paying attention. But in my book, and don't ask, I live in Florida. So for the Floridians out there, you can guess where I'm coming from here because we only have one legal book. But you can't parlay finishing position plays in the same tournament. So I had Ernie Els for a top 10 in the Champions Tour. I had Daniel Van Tonder on the DP World Tour. I had Carl Phillips, of course, for a top 10 in Puerto Rico. And I had Tommy Fleetwood for a top 10 at the API. Els, Van Tonder, and Phillips, of course, all top 10. Tommy Fleetwood, bogey on the last to finish tied for 11th.
Never bet Tommy Fleetwood.
Never. Ever.
I mean, have we learned yet that we can't – no more Tommy Fleetwood.
I thought it was just outright.
Yeah, that's a great bet. That sucks.
It's a great bet.
Yeah, it's a great bet.
See, that's and you talked about it last week on the show. And I really think, you know, for people who are watching the show that like to have a little bit of fun, you put $1, $5 on it, whatever. When you have all four tournaments that are being played that week, one golfer from each that you can kind of focus on, I mean, it makes it so much fun. Do you remember what the odds were on that bet?
Nah, I didn't really pay much. 216-1 is what I didn't hit.
Wow. That's not cool at all.
See, yeah. $5 to win $1,000. That's what we're trying to do here on this program. Yeah. Well, some of us are trying to do that here. All right, let's get to matchups. Patrick, you're going to start us off with a guy that won in the fall, and he should have won in February, and then he didn't. And so then he missed the cut last week. What happens? What's with Maverick McNealy?
Yeah, I went with Mav -120 over Sam Burns. Not really sure what to make of Burns' game at the moment. Hit his irons horribly last week. Has a meh history here. Some good rounds, just not good tournaments. And McNealy, I'm willing to overlook the miscut there at the API. He was in contention at this tournament last year a little bit, working with Scotty Ham. Full swing's looking really good, trying to hit some more cuts instead of draws. So can work the ball both ways, which I like, and can roll the rock with the best of them. So give me him over Burns. And then this one pains me to say, I went down with the ship with Davis Riley Davis Thompson. Sorry, Davis Riley is on my mind because he hit the tree on 6 today. But Davis Thompson went down with the ship with him the last couple weeks. Also Davis Riley, now that I think about it too. I don't know what's going on. But I'm going with Nick Taylor -105. Over him. Only two guys since the start of the season have better approach numbers than Nick Taylor. That's it. And so you put this guy who's an accurate driver, someone who has a real good sense of the moment and a great approach play, decent enough track record here, at -105 over Davis Thompson. I'm going to take that every single week.
Love it.
Fair enough. No more Davis betting for you for now. At least we got no more. You wouldn't see a texting about Davis Riley after he's tied for the lead up there on Friday. I mean, come on. No more. Soon. It's not happening. We're done with that. All right, Soba, what do you got? Will Zalatoris. That's a good
nice. One. Let's go.
So I just wanted to first, speaking of the tree on 6, which is getting a lot of attention this week, I once was out there, saw Ernie Els hit a drive that hit the tree and went backwards 30 yards. I ran back to the media center afterwards because I need to look at shot tracker just to see. It was listed as a negative 30-yard drive, and he was hitting one from way back right behind the tee box. Ernie Els is a big dude. Ernie Els can get kind of mad. If someone had walked in his way, if someone had whispered something at that point, he probably would have punched him in the face. I've never seen a guy that pissed off on a golf tournament, especially after just like, it wasn't like he caught a limb. I mean, it was not the best shot, obviously, but it was kind of unlucky too. And so that was, we're going to see a few of those this week, I think, which could be really fun. Check those driving stats. At the end of the year, somebody's going to be like, oh, how come they only averaged 287? Well, they had negative 72 yards hit at TBC Sawgrass on number 6. Okay, getting to my plays here. I think Zalatoris, I said it on the show the other day that I think he is building to bigger and better things. It's a ball strikers golf course, but the best matchup plays to me are the ones where you like one side and you want an investment on them and you really don't like the other side and you want to fade the other guy. I've talked about Victor Hovland last week. I watched him at two in the water during the Pro-Am at 17. He looked like he was going to walk off the golf course. I mean, he just took a long walk by himself, didn't talk to anybody for the next 10 minutes. He went and worked at the range for at least 3 hours. I did my show from 2 to 5. He was there when I started. He was there when I ended. And he is working on a lot of things. He is a big fade for me for a while. So I like Zalatoris over Hovland. And then I'm going to ride the Michael Kim train until it comes to a stop. And it might be this week. I compare him to the stock market when things are going well. Hey, we're all making money and everything's great. Then all of a sudden the bubble bursts and we're like, oh boy, we just lost a whole bunch of money here. Well, at some point the bubble's going to burst for Michael Kim, but Jordan Spieth isn't fully healthy yet. The world's most volatile professional golfer on the world's most volatile golf course. I will fade him this week, and I like taking Kim in a matchup.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. 5 straight weeks he's played, and he has top 13s, if not higher, in all 5. How do you not play him top 20 this week? Sia, you have a 3-pack for us, including a round one play.
Yeah, round one play I'll probably give out on the Early Edge. If you're listening or watching this show, make sure you turn into the Early Edge every Monday through Friday at 10. This will probably be on that card tomorrow. But let's start with the tournament matchups. Brian Harman -140 over Sahith Theegala. I think Jason Sobel said it really well in terms of you're looking for a guy to back to some degree, but you're certainly looking for a fade candidate when it comes to tournament head-to-heads, round matchups, what have you. And Thigala's game just isn't there right now. I mean, and I'll say the same about Sam Burns when we get to that round one matchup. Theegala's got to figure some stuff out, and obviously this probably isn't the course to do it. Brian Harman, on the other hand, has probably figured out at least how to manage this course, and we saw that in the last couple of starts, including the T2 last year. It's -140. It's pricey, but we got one person's game that's sort of in form with good course history versus the opposite in Sahith here. Shane Lowry over Sungjae Im. I mean, I'm going back to it. Me and Jason were on it last week. The week before that, on a Thursday morning Early Edge show, that matchup was available too, that same tournament matchup. So these three have been paired together for at least 3 tournaments in a row from a tournament head-to-head standpoint. And I'm just going to continue to ride Shane Lowry. He's been pretty impressive. And the thing is, fade candidate, Sungjae Im. The approach play in particular, it hasn't been good at all. So I like this price. I'm just going to run it back, speaking of until the wheels fall off with Michael Kim. I'm going to do the same thing with Shane Lowry over Sungjae Im. And then finally, I like Daniel Berger this week. The approach has been a little spotty over the last couple of weeks, but everything else is in very good form. And Sam Burns is the opposite. His approach play, I don't know what's going on. It does not look good at all. He is making up for it with the putter to some degree, but I think he and Berger will be kind of closer together when it comes to the putting for this tournament, and the approach play is just screaming like something's wrong. So give me that round one matchup.
See, you talked about a play you had last week. I'm going back to one that I had last week as well, because I really like Corey Connors this week. He had a solo third last week. We're getting him as top Canadian at +250. He has to beat Pendrith, Taylor, Svensson, Hughes, and Hadwin. Now, Patrick doesn't like it because we know he's on Nick Taylor, but he excelled in all categories, and that is a good sign. It's kind of like the Russell Henley before, you know, where he was at the Cognizant, and then he went over to Bay Hill and ended up winning. It's kind of, I mean, Corey Connors at a number, and I'll give it out later, spoiler alert. Connors is one of my plays this week. He's gained on approach and tee to green in 4 of 5 here. But can the putter stay hot? It's always the thing with Corey Connors. It was last week. We will see if it is this upcoming week. I want to ask you about one, Patrick. Jeff in the chat asked about Laurie Cantor, top Englishman at +750. Mm-hmm. And from a DFS play, I was just putting together a DFS lineup today, and Cantor's 6,000, and the way he's playing right now, pretty nasty.
Yeah, the Cleek legend, Pontevedra Beach, is a Cleek hub. By all accounts, the fans were out in droves today following him around, but obviously playing some really good golf to sneak inside the top 50 over the last few DP World Tour tournaments, losing that playoff and get a spot here in the players. So I like it. I will say I do like one Englishman who might be a bit longer than Laurie Cantor this week. And so it's not for me, but I can see why it's attractive.
Do you want to tell us who that is, or are we going to wait later in the show?
Yeah.
We'll wait.
Okay. Later in the show.
Professional tease. Fair enough.
All right, let's move on to finishing positions. One of my favorite bets to play. Sia, we're going to start with you since you have the top 40, top 30 market covered here. Tell us about, well, I guess, Sepp Straka or Michael Kim. Start wherever you want.
Well, I don't need to do a lot of explaining here because we if you watch this show, if you've listened to the first, 20 minutes of the show, you kind of know where we're headed with Michael Kim or Seb Strzok. I will say, to defend myself, I didn't realize I was the only, quote, matchup that lost something last week. It really was a nationality play, and it was plus 360.
Right.
I did hit both of my finishing position bets, so I just wanted to put that out there.
Kill it up, bro. We could have been undefeated.
I know.
Gotta hit that.
I hit my other matchup too, but anyway, the plus 360 is the one that lost. I'm going to go to Michael Kim top 40. Again, if you look at the metrics, we said this last week and probably the week before as well. It's just too good to pass up at this point. I can get the top 40. I believe this one is over at BetMGM, so that's going to include the ties at even money. It's a safe play. I usually do that with the finishing positions as opposed to the T20s. You can ladder this if you want to in the T20, T30 market, but I'm going to play it safe. I like the even money on Michael Kim. And then Sepp Straka, absolute beast. If you look at the metrics on him, it's the same as Michael Kim. He's just gaining in so many places, and he's spiking in a huge way round to round. Top 30, this one is over at DK as opposed to BetMGM. GM, which means it doesn't include the ties as far as I can tell, and that's plus 120. I just wanted to be very clear on the status of the including ties because BetMGM offered the T30 market last week. I didn't see it this week yet, and that's why I had to revert to DK for that.
Yeah, so the sportsbooks, BetMGM used to be the only one that included ties. We talked about that a lot last year when it came to finishing positions. A lot of the other books are including ties. It just has to say including ties, so right. Pay attention when you make those bets. Sia makes a great point. So Sobel, interesting one here. Patrick is usually a Mr. Denny McCarthy fan. Instead, you're playing him this week at a big number here.
Yeah, I am. And I want to go back to Michael Kim just for a second because we do a DFS show here on the Early Wedge. You guys don't let me be a part of that, but you guys are on there. Michael Kim at like 5,900 on DK this week. Like, he's going to be 117% owned, right?
Yes. Yes.
like everyone's going to have him. Like, some people might have him twice. I don't understand how we got priced there. I'm probably just going to fade him in DFS just because he's going to be owned by everybody else, just for the hell of it, and see if he that bubble bursts for him this week. But I do think it's a good play. I really do.
Can I make a point, Jason, real quick?
Yeah.
Because Mike McClure talks about this a lot, where if somebody's going to be so highly owned, especially in that range, and part of the reason that happened, by the way, is because pricing came out before the API closed. But still, even if that were the case, he still should have been in the high sevens or the mid sevens, in my opinion. So it's weird pricing regardless. But one thing from a DFS standpoint, game theory standpoint, like you said, Jason, it's probably not the best idea to play him. I mean, I'm still going to play him, but like, you can fade him, but still play him in like the top 10, top 20, top 30, top 40 market and get your leverage that way. Get your Michael Kim, cash that way and maybe fade him in DFS and just try to hit one of those. Anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a ton of sense. And you're right about that. Oh, by the way, I know the pricing came out before the API was over. So four top 13s in a row weren't enough to get him above 6,000, but the fifth one would have got him up to 8,000.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Anyway, okay, I'll start with my second play on here because you mentioned Denny McCarthy. Look, we talk all the time, and last week is a great example. The guys who are the best ball strikers in the world don't have to be the best putters. They just have to be better than average. They just have to putt pretty well. Russell Henley, Colin Morikawa, Corey Connors, they all fit the profile. They all did exactly that last week. I know Morikawa didn't putt great on Sunday and really the whole weekend, but they all putted okay. I mean, it wasn't terrible. That said, Denny McCarthy is the complete opposite. Denny McCarthy, he's going to putt really well. If the ball striking is, doesn't have to be best in the field, just has to be above the field average, be pretty good. It's been pretty good. This may be better than pretty good this year. He's been positive strokes gained with approach shots in his last four, five of his last six, and four of those events have been signature events. So it's not like he's just beaten up on some inferior fields. He's playing really good golf against some really good players out there. So I think he's made some huge strides in that part of his game. And I think Denny's a nice play for a top 20. And Daniel Berger is a guy that we're talking about strokes gained. And guys, I know we mentioned for those who are jumping in here and maybe don't look at all the stats, although I'm sure most of our viewers and listeners are looking at this stuff all the time. This is the absolute barometer of performance. Daniel Berger has gained in all four major categories in his last four starts. TPC Sawgrass is a course that tests all facets of your game. That's it. If you drive it well and you hit your irons well and you wedge it well and you putt well, there's nothing really left to do. And he's doing all of those things really well for the last month, month and a half. Look, if you want to take these guys for top 10s and be more aggressive, I'm okay with that. You want to take top 20s, a little more cautious. That's what I did here. If you want to take them for top 40s, just start counting your money now. I'm okay with that too.
You know, I'm kind of bitter with Berger, and not kind of. He was in the top 20 all week at the Cognizant, and then implodes on the back nine and costs me a parlay that would have won me, I think, $1,000. So, yeah, I'm a little upset about that. Still bitter when Minwoo Lee and Max Grazerman go nuts on Sunday to get in the top 20 and Berger somehow falls out. That was not good. Kind of feels like how you felt with Tommy Fleetwood last week. It's kind of how I felt with Berger. Still, I do like him. I still do like him. We talked about Michael Kim. I mean, how do you not play him in the top 10 right now, the way his game is? And he's the best follow on Twitter. Absolutely, yeah. No question about it. How about Christian Bezuidenhout? Here's the thing. He's plus 280 for a top 20, including ties, of course. Not usually my kind of play because his driver and irons have been spotty lately, but he's been one of the best putters on the PGA Tour this year, having gained on the field in all seven events this season. Can that hot putter overcome the long distance issues? I mean, he's gone T13 in each of the last 2 years and gained more than 10 strokes on approach and nearly six putting combined. So I'm giving the South African a shot at plus 280 to get in the money. All right, Patrick, I'd like to do this with the prop guys on the NFL prop show. Of these six plays on the board here, which is your favorite in terms of value and one that you would bet yourself?
Half dozen, I have placed wagers on two of them to win outright. So you're about to find out.
We're going to find it. Boy, look at that teaser. I know. Do a segue here. Coming up next, I guess Patrick's going to tell us what we have after my Do Not Bet list and after we hear from one of our sponsors. All right, it is time for everyone's favorite part of the show. All right, maybe not, but at least it's my favorite part of the show, and that is the auto fade list, which looks absolutely beautiful right now because there are no lines through it. It is a perfect list thus far, guys. We'll get it up on screen here. There it is. All right, so you can already cross out like most of these guys are probably not winning this week. Patrick, of these players here. Of the ones on this list, who should I be most afraid of having a line through their name next week?
Man, I'm shocked Russell Henley was not on this list. Honestly,
me too.
I'm very disappointed for the season long.
He was the one.
I thought he was the closest one.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Who should he be afraid of? I got the full Shane Lowry experience last week.
Yes, you did.
Tommy Ladd. It's tough. Tough to get those two. I'm gonna say Shane Lowry. Why not?
See, is this a clean sheet net for next week, in your opinion?
It is. If I had to pick one that like moderately scares me and a bold-faced moderate, it's Patrick Cantlay.
Yeah. Course history here isn't great, but yeah, I get that.
That's right. It's the chalky play, but it's Cantlay. I mean, if we're giving odds to each guy on the auto fade list of falling off the auto fade list, Patrick Cantlay's got the best odds or the shortest odds right now.
I will say this in terms of course history, Victor Hovland's is probably the best on this list or right up there. But do you trust the game right now? I don't, and nor do the odds makers at 60-1 or something like that. All right, let's bring in the outright picks. Patrick, you're going to start us off with a couple of names. Well, I guess you kind of hinted at it. So go ahead, talk about Denny at 90-1. Wow. Let's hear it. Yeah.
Yeah, I went with Boom Strakalaka again, 50-1. Just, I mean, he's playing like a top five player in the world right now. He's top 10 in driving accuracy, top 10 in approach play since the beginning of the year, fifth in total strokes gained. As well, solid history around this golf course too. Just don't really need to overthink it, I think, with him. I was pretty surprised. I think he opened around 65-1 when the odds reset Monday morning, and that was an immediate click. And then Denny McCarthy at 90-1. Like Jason said, he laid it out beautifully. The iron play has been great. The putter took a really nice step in the right direction, which you typically don't have to say for Denny McCarthy, but he looked good over the ball last week at Bay Hill. So I'm going to take a flyer on him also. And then I do have another bet that I made. I was going to pick someone at the top of the board, but I always have a tradition when I go to a tournament that the first person I see on site, I have to bet. And unfortunately this week, the media center, first time at the Players Media Center, they're like, hey, take a right. You guys are back there. I go left, and to the left is player training. I open the door, and guess who's doing a box set right in front of me? The Golden child himself, Mr. Jordan Spieth. So I have placed a wager on him as well as his tradition, and it's really only my fault.
Sobel, I'm guessing you've been to that room where Patrick's talking about.
No, I go to the right place and I make the right turn and go into the media center like you're supposed to. I've not been in there. That's a fantastic story, though. By the way, before legal betting here in the States, when we used to go over for the Open Championship, be like, oh my God, we can walk down the street and make a bet. We used to say the same thing, like, hey, if we see anyone on the trip, you have to. I mean, we've already been to the course. You've seen players, saw them at the airport, saw them at the course. But if you see someone walking to Ladbrokes, like, you've got to bet on them, which is how I wound up with a nice big ticket on Bo Van Pelt one year to win at St. Andrews. That did not cash, in case you have to go back to Wikipedia and look up to see if he won the Open Championship at St. Andrews.
I was going to say, I don't remember that one offhand. I got to ask you, before you explain this, I thought about Morikawa, and I also thought about adding him to the don't bet list, because losing with a four-stroke lead on the back nine last week
to Russell Henley.
Yeah, no, usually gets you automatic inclusion. But then I'm like, the game is still pretty good, but this number is not great at 14-1, though.
It's not a great number, and I will certainly admit that. That said, few factors at play here. First of all, we tend to forget revisionist history. We think Tiger Woods won every week because he shot 57 in the final round and won by 19 shots. Tiger used to get a 54-hole lead and basically give everybody else the Heisman, just stiff-arm the rest of the field. Colin Morikawa essentially did that for 15 holes, and Russell Henley blades a chip into the hole that nobody saw, and all of a sudden he wins the golf tournament. If that thing goes flying past, Morikawa wins by three, and right now we're talking about him being, oh, proven winner, two-time major champ, now coming to a place when he's feeling hot and he has a trophy in his back pocket. I mean, the narrative's changed so quickly. That said, the other guys at the top of the board, Scottie Scheffler, clearly frustrated with his game and the putter's not working for him. Rory McIlroy, I have no idea what he's doing. He's tinkering with every club in the bag, obviously getting himself ready for Augusta, but it tells me that he doesn't care nearly as much about these other tournaments leading into the major championships. Xander Schauffele, still coming back from that injury and still trying to get himself right. So he's got a little rust going on. So the only other elite player right there near the top is Colin Morikawa. We've talked about this tournament being one that tests all facets of your game. Colin Morikawa is number one on the list, strokes gained total. And we can talk all about, well, he hasn't won and wins are the thing. And this is what these guys are trying to do. And I get it, but there's no greater barometer for performance than strokes gained total. He's number one. He's my guy this week. I love Colin Morikawa. I also will take Hideki Matsuyama. Because we talk about Hideki all the time being a great tee to green ball striker, and he is. Hideki last year led the PGA Tour in strokes gained around the greens. Until last week, he was number one this year as well. If you gave 100 hardcore golf fans guesses at, hey, who do you think's the best wedge player around the greens? Does one of them ever say that you're going to get Jordan Spieth? You might get some Scottie Schefflers. You're going to get a whole bunch of Patrick Cantlay is really good.
I learned the hard way with Hideki. Sorry, Sobel, to interrupt. Yeah. Last year's Genesis, I had a big ticket on Cantlay. And as we remember, Hideki holding every chip at Riviera, I'll never forget it.
Yeah,
in a bad way.
Really like Hideki this week. Great form on this golf course as well. 7 top 25s in 9 career starts, 4 top 10s each of the last 2 years. Doesn't even count the 63 that he shot 5 years ago when COVID took over the world the next day, which if you're looking at the golf gods and karma, maybe they owe him something this week as well. And then Maverick McNealy was terrible on Friday last week. I don't know what happened. I didn't see it. Shot 80. I'm going to chalk that up as an outlier and take the inflated price. If he had shot 70 that day and made the cut and played the weekend and played pretty well, I would say that number is maybe closer to 60 instead of 75. I will take the bargain at 75.
So before Sia goes here, because I'm going to do mine before the without markets, I just want to point that all five of the guys in the with, or four out of the five guys in the without market that Sia is playing, all have afternoon or PM AM tee times. So if you're playing the trends,
interesting,
you don't need to play the without market. How about Ludvig? I mean, my three guys, ironically, I did not do it this way. It just happened to turn out. Ludvig Åberg, 18-1, finished eighth here on debut last year, gained nearly 10 shots ball striking and 12 tee to green. Those are outstanding numbers. The putter has been positive in the three events this season, where he's been at full health. Don't count the Pebble Beach and the first time at Torrey Pines when he was sick. And if the long clubs can perform similarly to last year, he's not dealing with peak Scotty or Rory, in my opinion. He will shoot close to 20 under par and win this event. I do agree with everything that Sobel said about Hideki Matsuyama. I have nothing more to add, but I love him at 33-1. Great value here. And then Corey Connors, I mean, similar to Henley last week, guy who doesn't win usually. Can he find a way with a consistent all-around effort? But hey, here's the thing. He won less than 2 years ago in San Antonio, so he's not trying to break a winless drought like Morikawa. And I'm talking like regular season winless drought like Morikawa is, or maybe some of these other guys. So at 60-1, I think Connors is one of the best values on the board. Now to UCA, you're playing the without market and a guy that has not won since May of 2022, but at some point I think he's going to this year, is JT.
Yeah, and good news. The way I'm betting it, he doesn't have to win. He could technically come in sixth place behind these five guys, and we cash our plus 1,600. Wow. Listen, I would agree with anybody that says you're not getting the best odds in these without markets, but I told you at the front end of the show, I don't like these tournaments as much as like the Puerto Rico Open, because I just don't think there's a ton of great numbers that you can get. So my kind of chicken way to get out of this is to take these five guys, Scheffler, McIlroy, Schauffele, Morikawa, and Oberg, off the board. I like Justin Thomas a lot. I mean, I do think he can win the tournament. I just would rather play the plus 1600 versus the plus 2200 by taking these guys off the board. Justin Thomas, I mentioned, and we've all talked about tee to green. You can go on Rick's site. I'll be live with Rick tomorrow and Patrick at 10:30, everyone, by the way. But you can go on his site and do the weighted tee to green stuff, 24 rounds, which isn't a huge sample size, but that's what I did. And that's what that's usually a lot of my focus. Justin Thomas is number one weighted tee to green. By the way, number two is Michael Kim, which I think is very interesting. And we've talked about him. Number three is Scottie Scheffler. Number seven is Sepp Straka. So these guys are really great tee to green, weighted tee to green, really great on approach, and I think have tremendous spike potential. I love how Justin Thomas's game is trending. He's got to be okay. He's got to be okay off the tee, get it in the fairway, and he's got to be okay with the putter. I think both of those things can happen. We know he's won here before. Oh, by the way, plus 1600, plus 3500. Not a big card, but I do like these two.
All right. And listen, this is a market that I usually play. I usually would agree with that. I don't love what I've seen from Scotty lately. I just don't know if he's not peak Scotty form, ready to win. So but I will never argue with playing the without market, just in case, especially since you're getting five players and Morikawa and Oberg, I think, are very live this week. Patrick, here's one in the chat that I think is a good one from David. What do you think about Keegan Bradley? He was a guy that I looked at initially before I put out my picks. What are your thoughts on him this week?
I like him. What's he at? Like around 50-ish?
40, 50 to 1, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, no, I definitely thought about him this week. Just unfortunately didn't make my card, but I'm not going to tell you not to play him.
All right, well, let's see who does make your card in terms of long shots. The first one is not a surprise. The second one is... you did hint. I didn't think of that name. So Nick Taylor, you've talked about, but Justin Rose at 135-1. It's an interesting name.
Yeah, I love Rosie on golf courses that are going to require you to think. He can't keep up with these guys on big ballparks. I know Bay Hill on paper is a big ballpark, but with how firm and fast it was last week, it really made you think about your angles coming into the green and everything. And you take away the two starts at Torrey Pines this year, and it's a top 10 at Pebble Beach where he contended. It's a top 10 last week at Bay Hill. And oh yeah, he has fantastic history at the Players Championship. And oh yeah, he almost won the Open Championship last year too. I feel like people forget that quite quickly. And so I still think he has that winning upside, and at a $135, I'm willing to find out if he does.
Okay, I don't mind it. Sobel, you're really picking some monsters here. Monster numbers. Billy Horschel, I mean, the recent form, not amazing, but not a bad pick anytime he's in the Florida swing.
I was told these are long shots, so we're supposed to pick guys with big
here
numbers.
Here we go.
First of all, I think I like Patrick's plays better than mine, so if you want to just move those names over to mine, I actually might just steal his. Secondly, I will give everyone the reminder, and I do this often. When you're picking a long shot for an outright, it's different than picking a long shot for a finishing position play. We're looking at all upside. If these guys finish in second place, unless you're taking them in each way market, it doesn't matter. Second to 144th is a losing ticket for you. You need the guy to win this week. So I want to take guys that have a winning ceiling. And Billy Horschel's a guy that's won, what, 8 times on the PGA Tour. He's made a statement that he wants to win in the state of Florida. This one is his hometown event. He practices at TPC Sawgrass. His coach, Todd Anderson, is actually the director of golf at TPC Sawgrass, director of instruction there. And so there are a lot of there's a lot of connections here for Billy. And look, if I'm playing a guy at the bottom of the board at 170-1, I'm playing a guy that at least has proven he can win in big fields. And second, I talked about Colin Morikawa being number one in strokes gained total this year, which is the barometer for performance that I like to look at overall. Number 5 on that list, just behind Rory and Scotty, is Nikolai Højgaard. In fact, the wrong Højgaard is actually higher on the board. Rasmus is somewhere in the 170, 175 to 1 range. But Nikolai has been playing really well this year. The numbers look great. Again, do I think he can win this golf tournament? I'm not sure, but at 220-1, yeah, I'll take a shot at it.
Yeah, I respect that. I mean, you and Patrick give the extreme long shots. See, I don't mind a 70-1. Doug Kim makes a lot of sense, no?
He does make a lot of sense. By the way, I think these are all really good DFS plays too. You could sprinkle on the long shots. Obviously, that's what this segment is for. But the ownership on Justin Rose, Nick Taylor, but particularly Justin Rose, Billy Horschel, Nikolai Højgaard is going to be really, really low. And there's some popular guys in those ranges that people will go to. So always understand there's like a DFS crossover here too, especially with the long shots, because they're long shots for a reason. So I think that's really interesting. Doug Gim is just it's kind of an easy click for me. I mean, there's a lot of potentially easy clicks like Michael Kim, Sepp Straka, Keegan Bradley's an easy click. I'm talking the outright market. I'm doing Doug Gim in the without market again, without the big five here. I told you about weighted tee to green and how important that is to me. He's 8th weighted tee to green in this field. Again, it's a limited sample size, last 24 rounds. He's 3rd ball striking. Now, obviously, the putter is the real big problem with Doug Gim. But 2 of his last 3 at TPC Sawgrass, he's actually gained with the putter, which for Doug Gim is actually an incredible thing to say. So if he's going to be confident with the putter, and if he's going to maintain this type of ball striking in short game, I'm all in. 70-1, and he could finish 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, potentially, and still cash this ticket at 70-1.
So, as always, I got to include parlays somewhere on this show. This one, I know it's only 27-1, but you can find this at FanDuel under Tourney Specials. I just think it's too good a value with Morikawa, Oberg, and Matsuyama. We talked about them with our outrights. 27-1, if you bet them separately, including ties, it was like 22-1 on some of the other sites. So take a look at that play there. And then one that I put together, top 20, and this one should count as a long shot. Let's go Tommy Fleetwood, who I know is Sobel is a big fan of his, especially last week. Sepp Straka, you guys have talked about. Aaron Rye, who was mentioned earlier in the show. And then how about Brian Harman, who I think was T2 last year here, and he's a former major champion. And we're getting 67-1, including ties, for this top 20 parlay. You want a long shot? I mean, I'll give you one of these each week. And if we hit one of them all year, then, you know, we're fairly profitable. So, hey, we'll take that at 67-1. Let's talk about, before we get to OAD, let's talk about LIV Singapore. Only 2 of us are going to partake in LIV Golf. Patrick, after your win last week, you didn't want to give us anything for LIV Singapore?
It's been a whirlwind couple days. So I didn't do it. I didn't do the due diligence, unfortunately. So nothing at the Sentosa Club this week from your boy.
Unfortunately, we'll wait for your next LIV pick because you are on a winning streak right now. Sobel, what do you got? Your 2 picks in LIV.
Yeah, so I, first of all, didn't know we were allowed to sit out from certain categories because sitting out the LIV event seemed like it would be a good idea. But it's a 7,400-yard golf course. Brooks Koepka was 3rd a couple of years ago. I think he's the defending champion. He won last correct. Year. Yep. If Brooks Koepka feels like winning, if he's like, all right, I'll play golf for a few days, then Brooks Koepka is going to win the golf tournament. If he doesn't, then I'm going to lose some money on Brooks Koepka. And then Dustin Johnson, just because there's a triple-digit number next to Dustin Johnson's name on a 7,400-yard golf course. What I said about Brooks, that goes for DJ too. If he feels like it, I don't know, maybe he'll go win. If not, he's just going to go have some good food and hang out for a while.
His game, though, is so bad. I think he finished behind Anthony Kim, which says something.
It was really bad last week, but that's also going to get us 100-1 number. If he played somewhat decent, it'd be 50-1, and we wouldn't be talking about him right now.
No, you're right. Does he care about golf anymore?
No. I mean, he hasn't cared about golf in 3 years. But
yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
That's fine, but you know what? Just maybe, for as much as we think he doesn't care, and everyone says Dustin Johnson doesn't care and gets back to him, and he goes, oh, yeah, what's this? and maybe goes for 100 to 1 for a couple bucks on DJ. I'll take the chance on that.
Patrick, I like to. I mean, I think it's pretty easy as far as live players go that John Rahm is number one. He's the best live player in the world. I can make the argument that Joaquin Niemann is number two. Are you with me or am I crazy?
I'm going with House Tyrell at the moment.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going Hatton too. I mean, would you say
Bryson's better than those guys too? I mean,
but here's the thing. Niemann has won 5 times since December 2023. I mean, I know 3 of them are in live events, but 5 wins is 5 wins. Doesn't matter who you're beating.
There's a distinction. Is it who's the best player or who's the best live player? Because I think those are 2 different things.
Yeah. If you were to do a ranking of live of the best players on lives, you know, if you were to stack them up and rank them in order right now, the way that they're playing, you wouldn't put Niemann 2 or 3.
No.
On playing on live golf, he's probably a 3.
Right.
Okay.
But when we get to Augusta, if I'm ranking the live players at Augusta, he's not in my top 3.
Well, because of the course, I mean, right, he doesn't have the course form that a DeChambeau or a Koepka or Rahm obviously has there. Now, I'm going Joaquin Niemann 8 to 1 here. He has 2 top 10s here in 2 years, gaining nearly 12 shots on approach. I mentioned that he's won 5 events dating back to December of 2023, and he's won twice in his last 5 events this year. So at 8 to 1, I don't love the odds. He's priced as the number 2 player in this week's market. And then how about Mean Dean Burmester at 22 to 1? Gained more than 20 strokes tee to green on the field in 3 live events this year. He was solo second last week with a T4 at Live Riyadh, and he was T14 here last year. Giving him a shot at 22 to 1, there's a little bit of value. I can't top Patrick's 25 to 1 on Sergio Garcia.
Who is the Live Golf fade of the week?
The Live Golf fade of the week at 11 to 1 is Bryson DeChambeau. So last week's was Sergio Garcia.
That is my bet.
If you guys watched last week's show, I said I wrote up the article for Sportsline that I faded Sergio Garcia. Patrick picked him on this show. You guys saw what happened. He dominated and won by 3 strokes. Isn't it crazy that Phil finished on the podium? I mean, is that a heck of an accomplishment, Sobel, or do we just not care about that?
No, we don't care. Okay. I'm not sure if Phil cares that. I don't know. It was on the middle of the night. I don't know. Like, look, I just can't get into the whole live thing. I don't know. It's good for Phil.
That's, 54 years old.
Phil. I'm very happy for him.
Finishing on the podium. Phil. All right.
I love Phil, by the way. At some point, we're going to do story time about Phil, and we're going to need 3 hours because I have a lot of Phil stories.
But before we get to OADs, I think this is a great one from Mutandas in the chat. I was going to bring this up. So FanDuel is offering a special, which I know Patrick's going to shake his head at, and probably so is Sia. You can boost a hole-in-one on 17 up to +218. So you can boost. So is a hole-in-one on the 17th hole at a little bit better than 2 to 1 good value? Patrick, I'll start with you there.
Wait, so thoughts on betting no hole-in-one on 17 boosted to -145?
So you can boost it to -1, or you can boost a hole-in-one to +218.
You can make a hole-in-one +218.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's been 4 holes-in-one on that hole in the last 2 years, I believe, if we want to talk trends, hashtag trends. That front pin is always I mean, I wouldn't bet it at all, but I think I would lean yes.
Really? Sobel, what do you say?
I say this. We spend 3 days researching and studying and making ourselves educated about all these plays. There's so much to bet out there. That's a great thing about betting on golf. There's literally thousands and thousands of combinations. I'm not betting on whether a ball drops into a cup or not. That makes no sense. Educate yourselves, do your research, and bet on something that you can actually have some, maybe not control over, but at least you can find some numbers that may make some sense. I don't know. A ball might go into a hole, and no, a ball might not go into the hole, and I don't know. There'll be a bunch of close ones.
But Sia, it cashed early in the first round last year. Can history repeat itself?
I am very proud of the fact that I've never, ever even considered, and no offense to the person who asked the question, these are not the bets to make. I've never even considered making this bet, even if it's right in front of my face, even if it's boosted. There's just no information that you could possibly obtain to say to yourself, okay, this particular bet is a good bet this week. It's just not a thing. Go for something else.
Bet, yes.
All right,
bet it.
Let's
do it. I have fun. I mean, guys, money, it's not ours.
I mean, put $50 on and see what happens. All right, let's talk about one and done. We had to reset after last week, and it's a good thing because my pick of Justin Thomas faded. But now we have the new one and done challenge for the Early Wedge Checkout Splash. The link is in, I believe, our show link here. You can also go to Splash, type in Early Wedge, and it will pop up. You need to sign up by tomorrow night, by Wednesday night. We would love to have you go against us here. All of us will be in this, and we will start again with our one and done plays. So let's see what we have this week. Patrick, you're going off the beaten path with Sep, really?
Yeah, I still got to sign up for this, by the way. I'm a little nervous. I'm going to forget. Yeah. Definitely not doing it tonight, so got to do it tomorrow. Yeah, I went with Sep Straka because hand up, we're going to start this contest with a little bit of controversy. I wanted to go with Colin Morikawa. Saw Jason put Colin Morikawa in, and I was like, I can't match him the first one, so I went with Sep Straka.
All right, fair enough. Soba, you like Morikawa.
Yeah, I promise I won't go with my favorite outright every single week, but Morikawa is my favorite. I think he's going to win, and so I'm going to take him in the one and done and try to get off to a good start. By the way, EC, are we doing story time or no? I mean, I just
want to we'll get to story. We'll get to story time after.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't want to get cheated here. All right.
Oh no, we got you on this one. See, Rory McIlroy. We haven't talked about him all show. Where'd that come from?
I know this is the first week that we're doing the Splash Sports thing, and these are official picks. Hopefully everybody that's watching and listening is either signed up or is about to sign up. I'm no stranger to controversy when it comes to one and done, as Patrick knows very, very well. Can I, because it's the first week, am I allowed to change this pick for the Splash contest, or is that going to be fun?
No, we don't. You got to do it for the Splash. You got to do it for the Splash contest.
We got to keep smoke and mirrors. See ya.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah, this is a diversion. Here's the thing.
Are you going to give out picks that you're not actually making? Well, that's a massive controversy.
I kind of rushed the one and done pick because I forgot about the reset thing. That when EC said reset,
you can change it if you want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, normally I will probably give my OAD, but I think it might be Rory. And here's the thing. He won here in 2019. And the thing about Rory McIlroy, the approach play has been a little spotty. Everything else looks pretty good. The thing about Rory that I think I find so interesting is when he's struggling, he's still like four shots back on Sunday. I just think his game is so good that even when he's playing poorly, he can win. And nobody's talking about him from a game theory standpoint. Rory McIlroy is not going to be like leading the OAD prediction chart here. So I just think it's an interesting way to start things off with $4.5 million, Rory McIlroy, who not a lot of people are going to take.
I'm going with Ludvig. He will be taken probably heavily, but I think this could be his coronation here. I know that the Genesis was nice where he won all that, but you win the Players, puts you on a different level. So I'm going with Ludvig in my one and done to start our new Splash Challenge, Early Wedge Splash Challenge, in a good way. All right, as we put up the recap screen, this has become a new Early Wedge staple. It is time for Sobel Story Time. What do you got for us this week?
I once saw a guy get shot at the Players' Championship.
What?
All right. It was during the Players' Championship. We were hanging out at Jack's Beach, the strip there. I forget the name of the road, but all the bars and hotels are there. And I'm upstairs at one of the bars, a little balcony. I'm sitting there with a guy named Harry the Hat. Harry the Hat, this is going way back about 10, 12, 15 years, but Harry was working for a gambling company in the UK, and he would come over here. He had a credential, and this is way before any of us were doing any of this type of stuff, and it had become mainstream over here in the States. But he was essentially talking to players and gaining information for the betting markets and for betting advice over there. I saw him once walk 18 holes in a pro-am at Kapalua with Daniel Chopra, comes back dripping in sweat, and he always wore a fedora, and his fedora is just all messed up, and he comes back, I got it, I know who's gonna win. And I'm like, okay. He goes, Daniel Chopra. And I'm like, you're ridiculous. That's not going to happen. And he bet Daniel Chopra like 250-1. And we spent the week at the Sony Open in a limo all week. So that was a fun time. In any case, me and Harry the Hatter sitting on the balcony, and there's a table right next to it. We're just having a couple of drinks, and there's a little courtyard down below. We see a flash of light, a loud pop, and we're like, huh, that was weird. What was that? Fireworks, huh? All of a sudden, there's cop cars everywhere. There's people running all over the place. That was a fun night at the Players' Championship.
Wow.
Do we know what happened to the person who was on the unfortunate? No, we never got.
I'm guessing not good things. I mean, probably better to not get shot than get shot. Guessing.
It's things true. You learn here. Patrick, have you ever seen that at a golf tournament that you've attended?
Words to live by. That's all I'll say on that. Better to not get shot than shot.
And with that, what a show we had previewing the Players' Championship. Thanks to producer Troy, who did a great job behind the scenes. For Sean Najad, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel, I am Eric Cohen. And as I always like to say, let's hit it big. Good luck.
Podcasts.